Okay. What I'd like to do today, a little different than the way we usually do it, but or at least when I'm here, but what I'd like to do is to look at one of the makos, specifically the makos of choshech, of darkness, first to understand what happens. Was it just a plain darkness? We'll get into a lot of the different possibilities that the different mefarshim suggest as to what actually took place. And then, as maybe a second part, try to understand a little bit more from a philosophical perspective in terms of what the significance of this makkah was. So one of the reasons that this makkah intrigued me is because it's the kind of thing that after learning it in kindergarten, first grade, and in those years, you never really go back and think again that happened. Everybody knows that there was darkness and everybody got frozen, and that's that. So I tried to look a little bit at the Farshim and try to see if maybe there are some other explanations as to what happened. I want to try and share some of those approaches with you today. So if you look at the Psukim, it's a very short part of this week's Parsha. The Torah says Perek Yud Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Vayomer Hashem El Moshe, Netei Yadocha Al HaShamayim, you should put your hands forward towards the heavens, V'hi Choshech Al Eretz Mitzrayim, and darkness will come on the land of Egypt, V'yomesh Choshech. And the darkness, this is a little bit of part of what the dispute is, what exactly does V'yomesh Choshech mean? The way the article explains it, which is the way that most of the Mepharshim do, is that the darkness will be tangible, will be something that you can feel. Vayet Moshe es yodol ha-shamayim, and Moshe lifts up his hands towards the heavens, vayi choshech afeilo b'chol eretz mitzrayim shalosh es yamim, and there was this thick darkness over the entire land of Egypt for 3 days. Lo ra'u ish es achiv, nobody was able to see anybody else, Vilokamu ishmi tachtov shloshes yamim, and nobody was able to get up from where they were for 3 days. Ulechol bnei Yisrael hayor b'moshvosam, but for the Jews they had light in their dwellings. So John tried to understand a few different things about this pasuk. Again, the first question is what happened during the makkah itself. What type of darkness was this? Was this different than a normal night? What exactly was going on? What was it that was preventing the Egyptians from moving? Why does the Torah specifically tell us that they couldn't see anything? The Torah already said it was dark. I mean, it's dark, you can't see anything. What's the Torah adding by telling us that it's lo ra'u ish es achiv, they couldn't see one another? Again, what is v'yomesh choshech in addition to v'hi choshech, what does that imply? And what does it mean that Bnei Yisrael had light in Moshe Vosam, in their dwellings? Does that mean specifically in Eretz Goshen, which is where the Jews resided? Well, no, anywhere that a Jew went, the Jew had light. So those are the basic questions. So we'll start with the most fundamental one, and I think we'll try and group the different opinions together in terms of answering the questions, try to answer all the questions at once for each opinion, and then we'll try and summarize to see what we've seen. So what happened during the Makkah of Choshech? So that seems to be fairly obvious. It was dark. That's what the Torah says. What's the question? What am I bothering you about? So I think first thing we need to do is to take a step back and try to understand what is darkness. Is darkness simply a lack of light? Or is there an actual creation? Is there something called darkness? Right? Is it just that whenever there's no light present, the same way if I would pull down the shade, then we wouldn't say that there's a creation of darkness. Obviously, the reason that it's dark in the room, if we turn off the lights and we close the shade, is because there's no light. There's just simply a lack of light. Or is it something more fundamental that no, when Hashem was creating the world, He created something called darkness. So again, the simplest understanding is that it's probably a lack of light. And when there's no light present to illuminate, what you're left with is darkness. So why would I think to say otherwise? So there's a pasuk in Yeshaya, which we incorporate into our tefillos, Yotzer Or Uvorei Choshech. that Hashem created light, uborech oshach, and it seems to be Hashem also created darkness. So if darkness is simply a lack of light, so what would it mean to say that God created choshech? He didn't create choshech, he didn't create darkness. Simply, he created a world in which, when there's no light, darkness remains. There's no illumination. So then you have what you have is darkness. And similarly, when it came to the creation of the world in Parashas Bereishis, it says Vayavdel Elokim Bein Ha'or Uvein HaChoshech, that Hashem separated between the light and between the darkness. It sounds like there were two distinct elements, one of light and one of darkness. And Chazal even add that until this point, or v'choshech mishtamshim b'erbuvia, somehow, something which we can't comprehend, because since he created the world in this way, we can't imagine it any other way, but somehow light and darkness existed at the same time. Not that they alternated more frequently and without the same pattern that we have of day and night, but literally that somehow darkness and light coexisted. So in fact, this is a major machlokas. It's a disagreement amongst the Mefarshim as to whether darkness is simply an absence of light, or, and how to understand these psukim, or was it actually a creation? The Ramban and the Ran and the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim understand that darkness is simply the absence of light. When there's no light here, then that's when there's darkness. But there's no creation per se of darkness. And the Rambam explains in the Mor Nevuchim, what does it mean, Yotzer or Uborei Choshech? So what does it mean that Hashem created Choshech? So what he explains is, which is an important idea generally, which is that what you see is that we're willing, that the Tanakh is willing to use the term of Bria, of creating, if you are the cause of something to happen, even if you didn't create it directly. That since Yotzer Or, since he fashioned, he created Or, it was through that Borech Oshach, the creation of light, that's what established, again, as a byproduct, that's what resulted in Choshech. That's what resulted in darkness. And that's what the Pasuk means. And he explains that in general, that it's a very important lesson to understand that what you cause is, you take responsibility for also, even if it's not directly. And that's how he says, that's how you can have the prohibition of Losa'amur Adam Reyecha, that you could be the equivalent of killing somebody for standing by and not helping the person. Again, it's a byproduct. You're not actively doing anything. But what you see from this is that Yotzer Or, that he fashioned light, but it's still Luborei Choshech. It's still considered to be a creation, the fact that as a byproduct, Choshech now exists. The Vilna Gaon, the Netziv, and others bring proofs from these psukim and other psukim, as well as some gemaras, that darkness, the choshech, is an actual creation, and that there is something called creation, called darkness, that was created. The Netziv asks a very powerful question, which is that, well, why would it be necessary for God to create darkness? If a lack of light already creates a situation in which it's dark, then what's the purpose? I mean, everybody agrees that if there's no light, it's dark. Nobody's disagreeing with that, with the Matthias, with the reality that's true. So why would it be necessary for God to create a situation where there would be something called Choshech? So he quotes from a Gemara in the Yerushalmi, and he quotes from a Medrash as well, that explained that Noach, when Noach had the Tzohar that he made in the Teva, which some say was a window, and some say was this shining stone. So if you understand that it was this shining stone, that's what illuminated. So the Medrash says that how did Noach know if it was day or if it was night? So the Medrash explains that the stone gave off more light when it was night outside as opposed to day. Meaning somehow, if it would be that there's just a lack of light, so when we illuminate, when you light a fire, when there's something that's providing light, it only provides it to a certain degree. However, once there was something that was created called choshech, called night, then at night, that same light will illuminate more than it would otherwise. So you have to go out and you can do tests and figure out how exactly like that works. The Yerushalmi says that that's true in deep caves, in caves as well, that you can light the same fire and it will give off more light when it's physically night outside, even though, again, it's dark in the cave. Okay, so with that background, we'll see soon why it was necessary to get into that perhaps a little bit more of a philosophical question. So I think we have three general approaches as to what happened during the Makkah of Choshech, the two extremes and then the majority opinion in the middle. In truth, the opinion in the middle can be divided in terms of nuances into a few different opinions, but the thrust of all of them is the same. So we'll start with I guess we'll start with one extreme, and then we'll go to the middle, and then we'll go to the other extreme. The Mefarshim, who like to try and stick to the simple pshat as much as possible, namely the Rashbam and Ibn Qasbi, they both explain that what happened was what it sounds like. V'hi choshech al Mitzrayim, was darkness in Mitzrayim, the same way that we would refer to a night as being dark. So here what happened was is that it remained nighttime for 3 days. For these 3 days, we'll see soon, maybe it was 6 days, but for whatever period of time that this Makkah lasted, all it was an extension of the normal night. The darkness that existed was the same darkness that one would experience on a normal night, and it just continued for the duration of the Makkah. So what does it mean? And that's why lo ra'u ish ha'zachir, they couldn't see the same way at night. If you didn't have the candles, why they didn't like candles, I'm not 100% sure according to this. Some of the other mefarshim do deal with that question, which hopefully we'll see shortly. So why that's lo ra'u ish ha'zachir, but why lo kamu ish mitachtav? Why couldn't they move around? So they said, no, the truth is that they couldn't move around. They just didn't leave their house. That's what it means. Physically, you know, the picture that we have of the person being frozen with his arms in the air and one foot up or whatever position he was in when the Makkah began, the Rashbam said that's not what happened. Rather, they were stuck in their homes because they couldn't see. You can't see for 3 days and you don't have electricity and there's no other light, so you don't move. You have nowhere to go because you can't see where you're going. And that's why it was lo kamu ish mitachtav. Ibn Qasbi, in his sefer, he says even more. He says that they were able to go out of their house, perhaps even a little bit, but the same way colloquially we would say that somebody who doesn't really go anywhere, you know, stays in the general vicinity of their home, we would say, oh, so that person doesn't go anywhere. Obviously, the person goes somewhere, but because they stay within, again, a small vicinity, we would say that the person doesn't go anywhere. So too, the Torah uses the Dibra Torah Belashim Be'adam. The Torah speaks the same way that we would speak, and the Torah is expressing the fact that they didn't go anywhere because they were very limited in where they could go. And what does it mean according to them that Bnei Yisrael had light? So this is interesting, that I would have thought that the Rashbam would have said that means that in Eretz Goshen, in the place where the Jews were, there this phenomenon of the night continuing for multiple days didn't exist. But in fact, Rashbam says, no, even a Jew who went into the house of the Egyptian had light. So we'll see, maybe he was influenced by some of the Midrashim that we'll see later, and maybe in terms of the Pshat, he had no reason not to say that way. So again, it certainly doesn't take away from the miracle of the Makkah, the fact that the night would last for 3 days, the fact that the light would follow Bnei Yisrael, that's all certainly miraculous and something that the Egyptians should have been influenced by. But he generally is sticking to the simple pshat. The middle opinion seems to be, and this is, again, with slight nuances, the Ramban, the Ibn Ezra, Rabbi Nobache, the Abar Benel, the Sforno, and the Kliyakar, all of them suggest that, no, the darkness here, they understand the Yomesh Choshech, was that it was palpable. It was something that you really could feel, and that the Choshech here was different. And this is where the Ramban says that even though normally I believe that darkness is defined as a lack of light, the Chiddush here, the special miracle that happened in this makom was that the darkness was actually a creation. It was something which was tangible. It was something that they could, that they felt, and that they experienced.
Was the darkness the type that they could not move about?
So that's what we're going to see. That's what we're going to see very soon. So the Ramban doesn't address whether, I don't think addresses whether they could physically move anywhere or not, but Rabbeinu Bakke says that physically it was so thick that they were stuck. They literally couldn't move.
They're like boxed in.
Right. The Kliyokar, I think, says that's why Paro couldn't even go to Moshe to tell the Makkah to end. It was only at the end of the whole process that Paro was able to talk to Moshe about it. He couldn't even come running after him because the Choshech was so thick that they were literally stuck. And that's how most of these Mefarshim explain. And even those... So how did this darkness occur? So within this Shita, there seemed to be, within this general approach, that there was a thickness to this darkness, there seemed to be... Two different ways of understanding it. Actually, perhaps three. There are those who understand that it was simply a new creation, that the darkness had a certain thickness to it. Ibn Ezra compares this to, he says that when you're in a boat on the Atlantic, sometimes for days on end, you'll have this darkness which literally has a feeling to it. It's something which is tangible. In which case, it would seem that this wasn't a new creation, the way the Ibn Ezra explained. It wasn't a new creation, but it was a new application. It was something that you don't normally experience on the land. It was something that you don't normally experience for this many days straight in the country. And yet, they experienced that. Other Rishonim understand, the Ambar Benel, the focus was on this, which is that why was it that Moshe was told at the beginning, Niteya Decha Al HaShemayim, why was he told to lift his hands heavenwards before the Makkah could begin? Because the way the Makkah worked was that there were these special clouds that Hashem sent, that when Moshe lifted his hands upwards, the clouds descended, and it was the thickness of the clouds that created this palpable darkness. It wasn't that there was a new creation of darkness per se, but rather there was a cloud or clouds that came down, and that was the reason that it was so dark. And they asked, so how come they couldn't light a candle? How come there was no other artificial source of light that was possible? And they explained that it was so thick that either, some explained that it would extinguish the candles, and others explained that it wouldn't even light. And they compare this to something which happens in deep caves. I wasn't so sure about this, so I looked a little bit online, and the William Halliday's book of American caves and caving, he says, in some areas, certain passages or entire caves are said to be so deficient in oxygen that matches, candles, and carbide lamps will not burn. So,
okay.
These early Mefarshim knew what they were talking about, and so in fact they didn't have the candles to do it.
But I think here, doesn't it say something about a fog? Use the term fog.
It says that it was something which was palpable. I don't think it uses the term fog per se. I think that's certainly one way of understanding it, because again, normally darkness doesn't have a thickness to it. Rabbeinu Bakke explains, he says something similar, but slightly different. And what he explains is that, and there are reasons that they want to say this, based on other psukim in Parshas Noach, about the fact that the sun and the moon are always going to be going on their normal cycle, so they're bothered by, well, if this is the normal darkness, then it's a major change in the cycle, because the darkness is now there for 3 days straight. Where was the sun? So Rabbeinu Bakke explains, no, the sun and the moon were doing what they normally do. But he said, when we get the light from the sun is very distant to us. So how is it that we experience the light of the light of the sun? Because the sun's rays pass through the atmosphere. What he calls channels in the atmosphere. Whatever, however you want to understand that, but he understood that there were rays of light which come through the atmosphere, and that's why you're able to... And that's the reason that we experience That's the reason that we experience light. Rabbi Nachman says that what happened here was that God created that these, right, he closed up these passageways. He created a thickness in the atmosphere. Again, it seems to be slightly different than what the first explanation that we gave, again, which is similar to a fog, which is that these clouds physically came down, like the Abarbanel was saying, was that not that clouds came down and that was the reason that it was dark, but the reason that it was dark was that somehow the whatever it is in the atmosphere that allows light to pass through, it became thick, it became opaque, and it didn't allow any light to pass through. Yeah, we're gonna.
So it became thicker.
Correct. Correct. We'll hopefully get there soon. The Kli Yakar explains, he says that it was the same natural darkness, but it doubled. How did it double? So what he explains is that Hashem took the night that the Jews should have been experiencing, and he took that night, and that night joined with the normal night that the Egyptians would have, and so you had basically a double version of night, so that however dark and whatever, you know, thickness a darkness usually has to it at night, again without any lights or anything else, it was twice as thick. And as a result, he says, when it says that for the Chol B'nei Yisrael Haya Or B'Moshe Osam, that the Jews had light, so he says they had light straight for 3 days. It wasn't that they had a normal experience of day and night. No, but because Hashem took the night away from the Jews and he put it with the Egyptians in order to double it, they had straight light for 3 days.
For 24 hours a day?
24 hours a day for 3 days.
Well, they had that in Alaska or in Sweden?
Right. So according to that, either he's not bothered by that, and he's not bothered by the small exceptions, or they were doing it, the sun and the moon were doing it, but they were doing it next to each other, meaning it was no extreme of the 3 days over here, and it was an extreme over there, and somehow it averages out.
But they could also look into the history of
the Jews. Right. So that's what most of the Mepharshim explain. The Abarbanel says not that way. The Abarbanel says that it was only in Eretz Goshen that they had light, and the Kli Yakar, I don't think, addresses that point.
I thought because they could look in the
list,
that's what Rashi says.
Rashi is dealing with one of, again, the exact details aren't 100% clear. He's dealing with one of, definitely an explanation within this. He doesn't explain where exactly the darkness came from, but he's dealing clearly with a darkness that you can feel, and as we'll get to soon, there for particular reasons, he understands that there certainly was light which traveled with the Jews wherever they went. Now, 100%, that's what Rashi is saying. So again, those are the two, those are two of the opinions we have. On the one extreme, the Rashbam and Ibn Kasbi understand that it was basically the normal darkness of night. Just the Egyptians experienced it for 3 days. And therefore, when it says lo kamo, that they didn't get up, it wasn't that they physically could not move. They could move, but they couldn't leave their homes. They couldn't go too far because they were, you know, groping around in the darkness. They could only use their sense of touch in order to be able, or maybe even be able to hear, in order to be able to get where they were going. It was dangerous. They practically didn't go anywhere. But it wasn't that they physically couldn't move. And this middle approach, again, depending I guess we have three options basically of how the darkness came, whether it was that a cloud came down and created this thick darkness, or that the atmosphere somehow expanded or I don't know, contracted, I'm not sure which way it would go, but the atmosphere became such that light could no longer pass through it, and that created a certain thickness to the atmosphere, or if it was that like the Kli Yakar says, that the darkness was taken away from the Jews and was doubled up by the Egyptians, that created the thickness. They understood that no, physically the thickness of the darkness was holding them back. The most extreme shita is that of the Torah Temima, and I saw also the Ksav HaKabbalah says the same thing. And what they say is that the sun and the moon functioned 100% normally. The atmosphere functioned 100% normally. Their eyes functioned 100% normally. So what's left? So what happened?
Blindness.
Now they say, he says their eyes functioned 100% normally. It wasn't their eyes. So what they suggest is as follows.
With the paralyzed.
What they suggest is that a layer of skin grew over and expanded over their eyes and didn't allow them to see.
Cataract.
I don't think it's exactly a cataract, because cataract would be a problem in the eye. I think they're trying to say it's not a problem in the eye. It sounds more like an extension of the eyelid, or from the way they say it. The reason that he says it is interesting. I think that they're trying to avoid saying that it was something with their eyes, because I think is that the Torah would have then said that. The Torah knows how to say blindness.
Right.
If it was the same way we had in Sodom or in other contexts, the Torah knows how to say that. The Kol Choshech here sounds like it's something external to the person. So this isn't external to the person 100%, but at least it's not the person's eye. It's something which is there, which is physically enabling the person from being able to see. Why do they want to say this? So they're bothered by the Medrash. The Medrash says, and this is the Medrash that everybody else was using also, but the Medrash says that the darkness was thick. Okay, what's wrong with that? The Medrash says it had the thickness of a dinar. A dinar was whatever, a certain coin.
Mm-hmm.
He says, what does it mean for darkness to have the thickness, let's say, of a quarter or of a half dollar? If it's thick and it's something which is all-encompassing, so it should have the same thickness wherever you're feeling. What does it mean that only one layer would have that thickness? It sounds as if it had a thickness, but the thickness was, you know, a centimeter. What does it mean that darkness would have the thickness of a centimeter? What it suggests is that no, it's what caused the darkness. What caused the darkness? A layer of skin. How thick was the skin? The skin that covered over their eyes was the thickness of a dinar. I assume that all the other Mefarshim who don't say this way would say, no, the way the Medrash is saying that it had the thickness of a dinar was just to show that it was something that you could feel.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was more than a dinar. But the same way that a dinar has thickness, the Medrash is highlighting the fact that this was something that they could feel. Again, since darkness is something that we don't normally experience as something which is tangible, so the Medrash is highlighting, no, this was real. This was something concrete. So how do they understand? So what does it mean that they couldn't move? They suggest that they were so overcome with fear over what happened that they were paralyzed from fear. And that's what it means, Lokam Elish Mitachtov. Where was their light for B'nai? So there was light everywhere. There was nothing ever diminished the light. It was only the people who had these patches of skin over their eyes that they didn't. So when Rechol B'nai Yisrael, Hayor B'mosh Bo'osam, that wasn't even in fact a miracle. And according to everybody else, it's the fact that, you know, that there was a sudden split between where the Egyptians were experiencing darkness and where B'nai Yisrael were experiencing light. That was part of the miracle. That wasn't the miracle. The miracle was simply that the Egyptians had their eyes covered over and everything else functioning completely normal. It's a very extreme understanding, and again, none of the early commentators say such, but I think it's at least important to be aware of. So again, these are the three main understandings of just what happened during the Makkah of Choshech. So the question that, again, some of you were alluding to in Rashi, which is, so why did Hashem specifically bring Choshech? So again, Rashi offers two explanations as to why he brought Choshech. The first was that it was necessary for it to be dark because God was planning on killing all of the Jews who did not deserve to be redeemed, who did not deserve to leave Mitzrayim with them. And it would be a chil Hashem. It would be something which would be, you know, embarrassing and inappropriate, and the Egyptians would, you know, be making fun of if they saw what happened. So he created a situation whereby they couldn't see anything. And since they couldn't see anything, this was the perfect time. They would die. The Bnei Yisrael had a few days to bury everybody. And okay, so they would notice people are missing, but they would, I don't know, I guess they wouldn't know exactly what happened. They wouldn't experience this massive plague that killed so many people. And that was one reason. The second reason that Rashi gives was that it gave the Jews an opportunity to search in the houses of the Egyptian people. And this way, when they're leaving Mitzrayim and they asked the people for to lend them the different things in order for them to leave Berechush Gadol, and the person claimed, oh, I don't have this jewelry, I don't have this pot, I don't have whatever it is, they say, what do you mean? I was in your house during Makas Choshech, and I saw that you have it on the shelf over there. So this gave the Jews an opportunity to see what was going on in their homes. So why did he need to bring two reasons? Again, I think he's quoting from the Medrash, but why did the Medrash need to give two reasons? And even more so, even if it was necessary, or even if it's true, but why was it necessary to even ask the question? Why was Rashi bothered here? By the other Makos, Rashi doesn't ask, oh, why specifically was this Makos brought? Why was it that the Arba was brought? Why was it that the Bara, whatever it is, he doesn't ask for the reason the Mako. So what was even the impetus for the question for Rashi to be bothered by it? So Rashi explains that, and if you read the Pesukim carefully, it seems that this is the case in the Pesukim, that in fact the Mako did not last for 3 days, but rather it lasted for 6 days. How do you see that? Because it says that in Pasuk Chaf Beis, Vayichoshech Afilo B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim Shloshes Yamim, there was Choshech for 3 days, and then Lo Ra'u Ish Et Achi, people couldn't see each other, V'lo Kam Ish Mitachtav Shloshes Yamim. And then again it says that the people couldn't get up for 3 days. So Rashi explains that for the first 3 days, there was one level of choshech, and that level of darkness prevented lo ra'u ish et achiv, that the people couldn't see one another. But at that point, the people could move around. They weren't physically incapacitated by the thickness of the choshech, because this was more of a normal darkness. It just prevented them from seeing. While the second 3 days, it's lo kam ish mitachtav shloshes yomim. The people couldn't move around for 3 days. And that was an additional level of the Choshech. So the Maral suggests that that's what was bothering Rashi. The reason Rashi asked here, how come the Choshech needed, why was Choshech specifically brought, is because this is the first time that you've had a Makkah which wasn't uniform throughout. Normally if a Makkah came, the Makkah was the way it was from the beginning to the end. And then, fine, Paro complains, Moshe Davin, then we're back to the baseline again. We go back to square one. But here, suddenly it was one way for 3 days, then it changes after 3 days. So Rashi's bothered, well, why is this Makkah different? Maybe it must be that it's something unique about Choshech. And that's why Rashi explains, based on the Medrash, that there were two reasons for the Choshech. Because during the first 3 days, when they couldn't see, not being able to see would have taken care of the problem of allowing Hashem to kill out the necessary people and have them be buried. For that, you didn't need to immobilize the Mitzvah. You needed to make sure that they couldn't see. And that would have been enough. And Rashi explains, but the fact that it changed after the first 3 days and now it became a thicker darkness, why was that necessary? Because now the Jews were going into their houses. Once the mitzvah is going to hear somebody inside their house snooping around, they'll follow the noise and they'll grab them. What are you doing in my house? Why are you snooping around? So that's why, so Rashi explains that the darkness became thicker, because that prevented the Egyptians from being able to stop the Nishal from looking around. And that's also seemingly how they even knew. How did the mitzvah know, once they were stuck in their houses, how did they even know that there was for Bnei Yisrael had or? How did they know that it didn't? Maybe this was a major plague of Choshech, which affected the entire land. But from the fact that they heard, they were stuck, and yet they heard the Jews snooping around, and they couldn't do anything about it. So that's why Rashi explains that, in fact, there were two reasons for the Makkah of Choshech. I wanted to now, for I guess what we call the second part, to look a little bit deeper. And part of the beauty of learning the Makos and the different layers and the different pshatim and the patterns, and there's so much to be said and that's been said by the Mefarshim in terms of looking at the different Makos individually, looking at the patterns as a whole. I think that that's part of what the purpose of the Makos was. The fact that there are so many levels to understanding it is because part of the Makos was to make it clear to Paro and to the entire world that God is in control and God controls and is in charge of everything. So again, so what is Choshech? What is Choshech? What lessons are to be learned from the Makos Choshech, regardless of which approach you want to take, but the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent this thing of Choshech. So the Medrash says that there's a machlokas, there's disagreement as to where the darkness came from. The Medrash says, Meheichan haya hachoshech ahu. Where did this choshech come from? And the Medrash has two opinions. Rabbi Yehuda of Rabbi Nechemya. Rabbi Yehuda Omar mechoshech shalmaila. It came from the darkness above. Shnemar Yashis Choshech Sisro Sivosav Sukoso, that Hashem is up and sheltered in darkness. Rabbi Nechemya Omar mechoshech shel Gehenim. It came from the darkness of Gehenim. Just it seems to be a little bit of a strange medrash. Again, we had technically a different mefarshim explaining where the darkness came from. This seems to be a much more fundamental question of where it emanated from, the original source. But we don't normally view darkness as something which comes from above. It doesn't sound like we're talking about the darkness of space or something like that, of the solar system, because we're talking about somewhere where God is sheltered in darkness. What does that mean? What's the medrash trying to teach us? And even the darkness of Gehenim, so usually the metaphors for Gehenim have to do with fire and heat and things like that. Where do we find that darkness is something which is emanating from Gehenim? What's the Medrash trying to teach to us? So perhaps we can explain, based on Rav Hirsch's insight into this Makka. Rav Hirsch explains that, and the assumption that Rav Hirsch is working off of, which is an assumption that many of the Mefarshim have, which is that as the Makos increase sequentially, the severity and the intensity of the Makos should also be increasing. So that now that we've come to the penultimate Makkah, we're right before Makkas Bechoros, we're at Choshech, this should in some way be much more severe than anything that Hashem has brought upon the Egyptians and that they've experienced so far. And he says that this Makkah was the most sweeping of all the Makkos. Says that it shackled the whole person, cutting him off from all fellowship and from all possessions. He couldn't move his hands, he couldn't move his feet. He couldn't even do the basics to attain the basic necessities of life. The person was completely stuck. The person was completely alone. This Makkah separated each person from society, put each person alone by himself. And it's very scary for people to be alone, for people to be cut off, not to be part of a society anymore, to be completely shut off from surroundings. And I think maybe that's the point that the Medrash is trying to highlight. Not necessarily that the Choshech literally emanated from Gehenim, but that for a person to be alone and that for a person to experience the Choshech of being completely cut off from society, that's a punishment akin to something which comes from a Gehenim. That's something which is terrible for a person to experience, again, not being able to have any contact with another person, not being able to do anything together with other people, not being able to associate with other people. That's something which, the way God created people, that we're social beings, and to be completely cut off is something which really paralyzes a person and is so terrible that it's something which really emanates from Gehenim. But what about the other opinion? That it comes from the Choshech Shamayla, comes from the darkness above, the darkness which shelters Hashem Kavayacha, whatever exactly that means. I think what that opinion expresses is that yes, here it was a punishment, but the idea of being alone is a midah of Hashem, and as such can also be positive. Because sometimes we're so afraid to be alone that we don't spend any time alone. again, what the Mitzvah experienced was the far extreme, the other direction. They were completely alone. They had nobody else. They had no contact with anybody else. They were cut off completely from their surroundings. That's certainly a punishment and a terrible situation. But sometimes, as social beings, we take the other extreme. And we're so involved with other people that we don't take time to think. We don't take a step back. We don't think about our qualities, what makes us individuals, what our goals are, what experiences we have that we can help bring to other people, how we want to raise our families, how we can affect the community. There are so many things that we can do, and yet because we're so involved with other people, even with doing good, that it can reach the point where we don't take advantage of the fact that there's also a choshech shamayla, that the choshech also is a midah of Hashem, is something which needs to and can be emulated. On Parshas Vayechi, I spoke at some of the minyanim about the comment that Yaakov made to Shimon Alevi, and he says to them that aru or apam, and then he says kalei chamas mecheroseyem, that it was that they taken for themselves stolen tools. And the Mepharshim explained that, and Rashi brings that what were the stolen tools? That they stole the tool of Esav, that by Esav it says, Achar b'chatichya, that he's the man of the sword, and they were the ones who took the sword and they killed out the city of Shechem. And it seems like a very backwards way of admonishing them. Trying to make fun of them, oh, and you're also like Esav. Yaakov, if he's trying to get to the point, so tell him, you should not have killed the people of Shechem. What's he gaining? What's he teaching them by saying that you took the qualities of Esav? So I mentioned at the time was that Yaakov was teaching them something very fundamental. That yes, what you did was wrong and you shouldn't have done it. But even more fundamentally is that you weren't true to yourselves. That you didn't tap into your own abilities. It was klei chamas mecheroseyem. You stole from Esav. You were too busy looking around at your surroundings. You were too busy looking and stealing qualities from somebody else. You have to know who you are. You have to know what your strengths are. And to go and just and act like an Esav is bad because, again, what you did was bad, but it's also bad because you're just not being yourself. And that's why it's incorporated into the brachos that Yaakov was giving to his children. What's the bracha? The bracha that he was trying to teach them, this very fundamental lesson, that every person has a responsibility to look inside and to figure out who he or she is. What makes me unique? What do I have that I can give to somebody else? And that's really, I think, what Yaakov was trying to teach his children. The Baal HaAkedah in his Akedah Yitzchak says that the Choshech was such an awesome, awe-inspiring Makkah that it really should have or could have been the last of the Makkos. What was so inspiring about Choshech over any other Makkah? So he says it reflects that the darkness that the wicked people, that the Rishayim in Mitzrayim, that Paro was walking, that he blinded himself from seeing the light of Hashem, of seeing the true path, of seeing that he experienced so many makos, and yet he wasn't able to see the light. And the Shem Yishmuel, in a similar context, explains that the reason for Choshech was in a certain sense, Midah Keneged Midah, it fits to Mitzrayim for the fact that they didn't see the light of Hashem, that they were walking in darkness. He explains a very strange medrash based on this. I was very bothered. I was at a wedding yesterday. I was very bothered by this medrash, and I asked a few different friends and Rabbanim who were there about this medrash. I didn't get any satisfactory explanations as to what the medrash means. This morning I saw this. This is the best I've seen so far, although I'm not 100%. The message, I think, is a very good one. I'm not positive this is what the medrash is trying to teach us. But there's a very almost bewildering medrash. The medrash gives a mashal. The medrash gives a mashal of a king. Here says, L'mad avar domer l'melech shesarech alav avdo, that one of the servants of the king rebelled against him. Amar l'echad leich v'hikahu gimel. Go and give him 3 lashes. Halach v'hikahu kuf. And instead he added on of his own, and he gave him 100 lashes. Okay? Kach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisaleh Hashem Shalach Choshech Ala Mitzriyim. He sent the Choshech against the Egyptians. V'hosev HaChoshech Mishalo. And the Choshech on its own, the darkness on its own, added to the Choshech. And that's what the Pasuk in Tehillim means. The Pasuk in Tehillim says, Shalach Choshech V'Yachshech. He uses a double language to refer to the sending of the Choshech. What's the double language? That Hashem sent the Choshech, and then the Choshech added on its own. What's the Medrash trying to teach us? The Choshech added on... What does all this mean? So the Shem Yishmuel says, is that the reason that Hashem sent the Choshech initially, and this is what, whatever exactly means, this is what the Choshech understood, was that the reason, I guess the Malachim that controlled the Choshech, whatever exactly that part means, but the reason that the Choshech was being sent was because the Mitzrayim, the Egyptians, were walking around in darkness for the first 8 Makos. They'd experienced 8 Makos, and yet they just don't get it. They can't get the message. They're just walking around in darkness, not being able to see the light. And that's why Hashem sends the darkness as a message to them that you haven't seen the light yet. You're walking around in darkness. The Choshech understood that, and then the Choshech said, oh, I'm going to add Choshech to that. Why? Because when it saw that for the first 3 days of the Choshech, when the Choshech was there and it was lo ro, ishet achiv, that they still didn't respond, the Choshech said, I have to send you another version of Choshech because you don't even see the Choshech of the Choshech. You don't even understand the darkness of what you're experiencing. You don't understand that in the first half of the Choshech, you've already been blinded not just to the 8 Makos. You haven't gotten that message. You're blinded to the Choshech also. And that's why the second half of the Choshech, it was Yavo Choshech, Shalach Choshech, V'yachshech. The Choshech added to it also. And it was another level of the Choshech. Why? Because it was the same message, the same reason that Hashem sent the initial Choshech, the initial darkness. Because they were walking around in the dark, the Choshech added on its own for the Choshech. That since they didn't see the message of the initial Choshech, that's why the Choshech added to the Choshech. And I think that this Makkah, of all the Makkos, in truth reflected Hashem's greatness and its control over nature, perhaps more than any other Makkah. When it comes to illnesses, when it comes to things that happen to the animals, when other things that are happening, a person could theoretically say, okay, so it happens to me, it didn't happen to the Jews. It's a strange coincidence. It happens. Some people get sick, some people are more susceptible. The animals of some people die, some people don't die. It's something which theoretically can be explained, and if you're that stubborn, the Egyptians could explain it in such a way that the reason it's not happening to the Jews, the whole thing is just a coincidence. But when it comes to light, light is different. Because if I'm holding a light, there's no way for me to control the light in such a way that you can't experience light. As much as I might not like you, and I don't want you to have any enjoyment from the candle that I'm holding, there's nothing that I can do that prevents the light from being expressed all over. There's no way that I can stop the light from being shown across the room. And in that sense, Hashem showed His control over nature even more than any other Makkah, through the Makkah of Choshech. That B'nai Yisrael could be walking into the homes of the Egyptians, and the Egyptians know because they're stuck. And they see that the Jews know exactly where they're going. They have that light. And yet they have the inability to experience that light. That's a contradiction. We can't even comprehend such a thing. We can't comprehend how light can exist in such a way that only I can experience it. If somebody right next to me, who's within the normal distance that they should be able to experience the Choshech, they can't experience it. And in that sense, the Choshech really was an awe-inspiring Makkah beyond everything else. There's no way that the Egyptians can possibly explain this. There's no way to explain this as nature simply running its course. So I think, and if you take this explanation a little bit further, then when the Torah says that Olchol b'nei Yisrael haya or b'moshvosam, the light was more than just light also. It was that the b'nei Yisrael were awakened, b'nei Yisrael understood. It wasn't just that they experienced the light, but they experienced the opposite of what the Mitzrayim had. It wasn't that physically they could see, but they saw the light of Hashem. They saw Hashem's power. They saw the fact that they had the light there, and yet this person was somehow stuck in the dark. How can these two things coexist? They saw the Yad Hashem. And that's why it was now that Elchol B'nai Yisrael Hayor B'Moshe Hassan, the B'nai Yisrael fully experienced the light, not just the light of being able to see, but the light of being able to experience the clarity of seeing God's control over all of nature.